This is Connected to Chicago with Bill Cameron.
What's going on in Chicago? What the hell is going on?
Covering the big ideas.
Is the mayor full of crap or is it real?
The tough choices.
Guacamole? No, I like guacamole.
The farce.
Let's get right down to nut cutting.
And corruption.
I've got this thing and it's golden.
Plus special reports and newsmaker interviews along with the esteemed panel of reporters. And now, Bill Cameron.
We're in the mayor's office again at City Hall for another visit with Rahm Emanuel. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Bill. How are you doing?
Real good. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. Excellent.
All three
kids are in a good space. Amy's in a good space.
So you want a third term. Why?
Well, there's more to do, more to build on. We've made progress in certain things like our graduation. Rate is growth is 3.5 times faster than the nation, which means not just that, but we're not just riding away, but more importantly, more kids are not only graduating high school, more kids are going to college than ever before. But one of the things, that's a great thing. One of the things I want to do, and you know this from day one, when I became mayor, half our kids didn't even have a full day of kindergarten. We now have universal full day kindergarten for every child. I want to get ourselves to universal full day pre-K for every child. And that's something I think really, really important to finish for the city and ensure that, more importantly for the city, but every child has a brighter future because of that. And if we're going to succeed, everybody's got to get over the bridge together. There's other things I want to do as it relates to public safety and making sure we see through both our police reform, but also making sure that we can keep investing in a modern police department. That's reducing gun violence and then investing in expanding our after-school and summer jobs program for our kids. So there's a lot of unfinished work. Look, part of it is, Bill, is a couple facts. One, 5 years in a row, Chicago's the number one city for corporate relocations in America. 5 years in a row, Chicago's the number one city for direct foreign investment. 5 years in a row, Chicago's graduation rate has grown faster than the United States by 3.5 times. Those are all good metrics, but not everybody's participating, and I want everybody to have, as I often say, one city with one future, and we have a lot of work to do to ensure that happens primarily through education and investments. And part of what I'm going to be talking about is ideas that I think build on that progress, but making sure it reaches every corner and every resident of the city.
Now, through the first two terms, you've put the taxpayers through a lot of heavy lifting.
Well, I kind of look at it, so let me say this.
Okay.
There was a lot of deferred work that nobody else had done. Had it done, I think, Bill, you're raising your eyebrows, Bill, because you were here, I wasn't.
You're right.
So let's ask the question in the way that's accurate to the facts. Had this been taken care of before, it would have been taken care of at a much cheaper price. People chose to their politics over the progress of the city. They kicked the can down the road. They didn't address needs. I know in 2007, the pension was, I think, by the Blue Ribbon Commission, was like $400 million. By the time I came, fixing it was about $1.2 billion. I negotiated something with labor. The Supreme Court said no. So we had to do some work on the pensions that was cheaper in an earlier time than when I came here. Now, had we tried to kick the can down further, not only would the pensions have been in real hock, so would the whole city. And the event and the new jobs, the new companies coming to the city would stop. I have no desire to having to do what I had to do, except for the politics, the road had basically come to an end of playing politics and letting somebody else and fix it and nope, and letting our politics of elected officials take ahead of the responsible thing to do. We also cut and reformed about $630 million out of the budget where things were basically because of politics, we had put a tab on the taxpayers. And we made real tough choices. But we've been upgraded. Chicago leads the country today in company expansion and relocation. Part of the reason, not the total, was because we were responsible rather than irresponsible. I would love nothing else in my life if somebody else had done it. They didn't. And so, you, Bill, were here, and you were reporting, and you know that. So the question isn't what I did. Part of the question has to be what wasn't done beforehand that required that action. Fair or not fair?
Don't blame Rama.
That's not what I said, but that's not fair.
Okay.
That's not fair, Bill. Was the problem left here? Did I create this problem? That's a simple question. The answer is, you know it and I know it. You're looking and nodding your head. I did not create it. I was going to be determined to do something different, which is to fix it.
Yeah. Now, the mayor of the next term is going to have to do heavy lifting again because the pension problems get worse. Can you cite the revenue source of how you'll do that heavy lifting?
Look, we right now, as we got upgraded in our outlooks, it's because we did two things, both arrested the budget that was bleeding and put the pensions on a more stable course. And we have shown a willingness. Now, I want to repeat, I didn't kick the can down the road. What I did is immediately sat down with organized labor and said, let's work this out together. We had a joint plan that the Illinois Supreme Court said it's not constitutional, but both of us were willing to live with it. So then we went to an alternative backup because it was more important to solve the problem than to point fingers, which was done before.
Mm-hmm.
So we will work together. And doing that, you say get worse. My view is we're actually stabilized for the first time rather than just bleeding, and we will continue to fix it.
Oh, really? Is there any chance you won't need new revenue to?
I didn't say that, and at the right time will be the place where we deal with that.
Not going to tell me here and now?
That's not right now. What people should know is that the pension today and in the future will meet its obligations, and we have the contributions by both the workers and the city to meet our obligations, and we will be planning accordingly because we passed a law that requires actuarial funding.
Yeah. Would it be fair to the voters to at least rule out the property tax?
Yeah. I think, Bill, the way to look at this is, and here's how I look at this, is we have done a lot on property taxes. For our teachers, we've done it. For our police officers and our firefighters. And the good news is the city stepped up. I make no bones, and I want to repeat. I fixed a problem, and you know this, that I inherited as the mayor. I didn't spend 10 years not contributing to the teacher's pension at all and asking for a holiday. We fixed it. And more importantly, we got the state to finally pay a portion that they should have been doing for decades. Decades. And finally got them. And also making sure that new teachers paid their full portion. Those were things that were never done prior to my tenure. A, paying into it, B, getting the state to pay it, and C, getting new teachers, to pay their share. And we have to be honest with ourselves of the responsibility. So we're going to be honest with people, talk about what we need to do, solve this problem collectively.
Everything's on the table.
Bill, when you answer my first question, I'll answer all your questions. How's that? You refuse to even, you'll nod, but you won't whisper into the microphone. We walked in, all five pensions were upside down, and the city's budget was running a 20% annual deficit.
I'll stipulate.
You'll stipulate. I didn't create it, but the good news is we took 600. We don't do scoop and toss anymore. We don't raid the rainy day fund anymore. We don't sell assets anymore to balance the budget. We don't put phony numbers in the budget. And all four pensions have a funding source fully dedicated to them. And on the teachers, both the state and the teachers, new teachers, are finally paying to something they never did before. And more importantly than that, the state is finally paying its fair share of education to kids in Chicago. All things that are different and changed in the last 5 years.
In the coming campaign, do you expect a runoff?
Bill, here's the way I look at it. There'll be plenty of time to talk about the election. I'm not looking at 2019 today because the most important election is the one in 2018. I'm looking at my job. Let me just say give you an example. On Friday, I'm going to lay out a plan on small business. Now, when I came to office, we had more licenses on the books than L.A., Phoenix, Atlanta, and Philadelphia combined. We reduced them from 117 down to 40. Massive reduction. One of the big challenges for small businesses was finding financing. So we introduced the largest micro-lending program in the United States for that kind of $15,000 to $25,000 range. And we instituted professionalization, getting the help and guidance they need with 10,000 small businesses. Starting in which will be in the upcoming budget, but we're going to put and announce for new businesses. Your first year is harder than your fifth year. We're going to give you a two-year license for the price of one for those that are new businesses. It affects about 2,300 businesses a year. So anybody that's a new business will pay basically half for the first year, because your first year is different than later on. That's a really something that a lot of small businesses talked about, that, you know, I'm now established, or when I established, this would have really been helpful to me. So there's that. Second is what I call retail's under some challenge from online. A lot of people, before they commit capital, fixing up a storefront, we allow what would be a pop-up license. So you can kind of go be in the store, test market, rather than go put $150,000 into fixing something up. So that allows you to figure out whether this is the right location, right type of business, what works or not work before you commit your life to savings to something. So that will be a pop-up license. The third is around the other issue that's big for small businesses, inspections. We used to go back, write a report, they come back and send something. Today, we're going to make sure all the inspectors have iPads. They can give in real time the report on the inspection. We're going to work on evening hours, and we're going to work on weekends, so we're not disrupting a business's business hours. And they're away from customers and with us. We don't want that to happen. And then, obviously, for cafes and restaurants that want a year-round license as it relates to the patio, we're going to provide that. All big changes that small businesses have asked for that will, in my view, continue to make Chicago's small businesses, neighborhood economies, much more vibrant, much more successful. And these are things that individual businesses, groups have all told me this is what they need. And it builds on what we've done in the last 6 years in reducing the amount of licenses, providing more funding mechanisms. And if you also consolidate and add up through the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund, TIF dollars, SPIF, all these different accounts, we're probably going to do somewhere close to $50 to $60 million in financial assistance to small businesses.
Sidewalk cafes in the wintertime?
I just gave you a list of seven things. I think you're really a little too self-absorbed, Bill, thinking about yourself. Well, the restaurant businesses want it. It would not have been, was it not first? What I do know, let me say it this way. The cost of your license on your first year was a big issue. So reducing the cost, or giving people a two-year license for the price of 1 year when they first start, was a big deal. The Restaurant Association and others came to us about this. Today they get a 9-month. They wanted it 12-month.
Go figure.
For that constituency, which is in your, think of your neighborhood and business, restaurants, coffee shops, bars, etc. That's a big deal. That's what they wanted. We're trying to create vibrancy in our neighborhood economy and our small businesses.
Bring your parka. We're talking issues.
Or your own personal heater. And we'll plug it in.
We're talking issues at City Hall with Mayor Rahm Emanuel. You lost one in Springfield this week. Mm-hmm. Democrats were unable to override Governor Reiner's veto of something you passionately won, and that's to license gun dealers.
Well, no, he vetoed what was common sense gun legislation that both Democrats, Republicans, and House and Senate and law enforcement community were for. I, you know, somebody that passed the 5-day waiting period for Brady, bill for President Clinton, you know, that failed 6 times before it passed. I talked to Senator Harman this morning, the sponsor, Senator Cullerton, yesterday. I feel actually what we're doing is making some adjustments to add to the majority, so it's veto-proof.
So you're going to make a run at it even before the election?
Oh, I think that this, based on my, as of 3 hours ago, things can change down in Springfield.
Sure.
I feel like we're going to have another bill on gun licensing, the gun shops.
Okay. And what are the chances Reiner might go along now that he's through his primary?
You got to get him on your radio show.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, now that he's passed his primary, that's a fair question for him to ask.
Okay. Speaking of...
And it may be, he may calculate that he paid a political price, and therefore he now wants to be part of a winning team.
Well, in his to his credit in this battle, he's not bragging that he beat you guys. He's promising alternatives soon.
No, what he's doing is realizing he was on the losing end, and that the general election is not the primary. And I told you he would change before. I told you once that happened, you always see he's got a different hymn book. Mm-hmm.
So you kind of think gun shops are going to get licenses sooner than later?
I think that we are making – I'm not going to make any prediction except for we haven't given up, and I actually think Senator Harmon and the others working on this and the leadership are making the type of adjustments that in the end of the day we're still going to get gun license gun shops licensed to make sure that everybody feels like they've gotten heard in some adjustments.
And in as much as you don't want to talk about 2019, let's talk about 2018. Any chance that J.B. Pritzker could lose this thing?
Well, you know, I'm not here to play prognosis, Bill, but here's what I do know. He's offering a set of ideas about the future. The state is a pretty strong Democratic year. Illinois is a pretty deeply a blue state. Nothing ever, if he took it for granted, that would be the biggest political mistake. What I do know is he's not taking anything for granted. That's what's important. Now, he has to lay out his vision and ideas for the state's future because in the end of the day, people will vote for the future. The problem for the governor is he's done, over the last 3.5 years, has gotten nothing done. And therefore, it has left him in a position where he can't tell people why he should get a second term because there's nothing in the first term that's been redeeming about his agenda.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about Ford announcing that at Torrance Avenue they're not going to produce the Taurus anymore?
Yeah, but they are putting a new vehicle in there. And they also, I mean, I talked to them today. First of all, there will be no effect on jobs, full stop. Nobody loses a job. In fact, it employs all in, both at the plant and suppliers, a little over 5,000 people. There's not going to be a single job loss. Second is, they can't produce enough Explorers from that facility. So that gives them more space to produce more Explorers to meet all the demand out there. And we're one of the big purchasers, our police department, of the Ford Explorer. Mm-hmm. I think this year we're doing about another 700 of them. Third is, they're putting a new vehicle in there they believe has a really strong future. So, one, no job loss. Two, a more viable car. And three, whatever slack there is so they can use that slack to produce more Explorers that are one of the hottest selling cars for the Ford family of cars.
So this is a smart company.
Well, that's a larger. I'm not on their. I'm not on their earnings call and everything like that. But let me just say this: for Chicago, they are a great corporation. You have a company that manufactures and produces and creates a car that's exported to more markets around the world than anywhere else for any Ford plant, anywhere in the North America. Suppliers and the Ford facility is about 5,000 manufacturing jobs. That's a significant employer, private sector employer for the city. So, and I was on the phone today with them. And I think that we put a statement out because of our conversation. So no net job loss. In fact, the same maintenance. And if anything, it will only strengthen the brand that comes out of there, which is the Explorer.
They finally got Bill Cosby guilty on all counts. What are the implications for the Me Too movement?
Well, I think I haven't seen – I actually just walked by. I haven't really – I've been in meetings on the schools with Janice Jackson. I think the implications on this is that any abuse by anybody in any position of power is not accepted. This is a piece. I don't think it's just one thing, this decision. So it's a piece of a series of things that have happened across the entertainment industry, sports, and I don't have to come through all the, you know,
news, media,
yeah. Media writ large,
yep.
Politics, that, you know, any sexual advances or any hostile work environment is not accepted anymore. It has consequences. That's the big thing. It's not only not accepted, there are real consequences.
And how do you think the sexual harassment cloud spinning around Mike Madigan and Alderman Quinn is? What are your thoughts on that? Is that containable? Is that going to be a political problem?
Well, I've spoken to it. I think that, look, As it relates to Springfield and the issue, there's a third-party commission. They're going to issue a report.
Mm-hmm.
The report is going to say what it's going to say. When that says, the chips will fall where they may, and you're going to have to deal with that in that effort. And I'm not going to get ahead of that, but it has to be independent and it has to be thorough. And that's what I think. And so there's no quarter here. I'm proud, as you know, this week, David Schwimmer and I launched an awareness in Chicago, through both in our municipal, bus stops and our billboards, but also our cabs, to make sure that people know what's appropriate and inappropriate and how to handle it when it happens. In the past, well, think about this, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, let alone 20 years ago, there wasn't really a place for a woman to turn to, or it wasn't really discussed to where you turn to as it relates to how to redress for sexual harassment in the place of employment.
Mm-hmm.
And today that's different. And so as it relates to what's happening in Springfield as a speaker, there's a commission. The commission's going to come out with a report, and it's going to have to be dealt with, whatever the report says.
One question on your coming campaign, though I don't think you want to talk about it in general. I won't answer all the noise going on. Mm-hmm. But for yourself, among the voters, who is Rahm Emanuel's base?
Yeah. Well, look, I think that my goal, I know you want to talk about that. I'm not going to sit here and play political. I used to do that for a living. I'm not going to do that. I have a goal for the city to make sure that we're one city with one future. There are other parts of the city doing real well. Other parts of the city are doing better than they were before, but not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's through education, invest in our small businesses and the retail economy. And what I do know is it has a broad base of support. And I see it all the time. I'm in all parts of the city, more than even you are, Bill.
For sure.
And so I know what's out there, and people want to be part of a city that's building a bright future. And that's why, whether it's stuff that we're doing on making sure that we have full-day or early childhood education for every child, also access to every child has a plan for post-high school education. That's the biggest ticket to making sure everybody can succeed. And everybody succeeds together.
Why are you reluctant to name who your base is? I get all that.
Because I just think it's a political. It's like sitting around doing as if you're a political operative. And yeah. I'm not. I'm the mayor of the city. My base is the city of Chicago, and its future. And everybody counts in that. And if you want to talk about politics, you'll have a bunch of people that will talk about dissecting the electorate. That's not how I look at my job. My job is to make sure that whether you're on the south side, the north side, southwest side, northwest side, the west side, downtown, central business district, or outside on the periphery, you see a city on the move and you know that it includes you. We are not there yet, but we are. When you look at our education, you look at where we are on the fiscal issue, you look at where we are on creation of jobs. At every level, we're better than we were before, but not where we need to be.
Well, wait a minute. Rahm Emanuel is not a political operative?
No, the mayor of the city of Chicago is about, do I look at politics? That's how you make advances and stuff like that, Bill. But my attitude on this is there is a broad base of support for a city that's moving forward and moving forward together. And I am determined that we have one future where everybody participates and that we have, like I said, on small businesses, I'm proud of the fact that many companies move their headquarters to the city of Chicago. The small business plan is to make sure the bulwark of our neighborhood economy is strong. Now, before I got here, we had so many licenses, the only people succeeding were the lawyers that helped you file for it, not the businesses. So we reduced those by over 70%. Before I got here, businesses were craving for some guidance and counsel and professional help. That's why we set up the 10,000 small business, and over 1,000 businesses are getting that advice. Before I got here, we never really helped businesses with the plan. We now have this micro lending credit, the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund, that are making direct investments north of $50 million a year to help businesses, small businesses that can't get access to financing from banks, get the help. Tomorrow, through the reduction in fees on licenses, the reduction in inspections, we're going to continue to make sure the bulwark, the foundation of our neighborhood economy is creating jobs. That's the end of the day. And that, to me, is part of one city with one future. And it's in every neighborhood. You have to represent the whole city, and that's my job.
That's Mayor Rahm Emanuel here on Thursday afternoon in the mayor's office. Mr. Mayor, thank you for your time.
Thanks.
After a break, our roundtable with Lynn Sweet, Ray Long, Greg Hines, and Fran Spielman.
Connected to Chicago, a look at the top stories of the week with the people making, covering, and talking about the news of the day. Podcasts are available online at WLSAM.com. Now, Bill Cameron.
Time for the roundtable, where we just get to tell the truth with Lynn Sweet of the Sun-Times, who, by the way, has just won the Washington Women in Journalism Award for print reporting. Congratulations, Lynn.
Thank you, Bill. Good to be with you.
Also here in the studio with me is Greg Hines of Cranes. Hey, Greg.
Sir.
And over at the City Hall Press Room, Fran Spielman, Chicago Sun-Times. Hi, Franny.
Hi. Congratulations, Lynn.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Well, as we just heard in segment one, you wanted to say something, Greg?
I was going to say, Lynn, next time she's in town, can buy us all drinks.
Let the record show Lynn is silent on that.
No, I'm good. I'm good for it.
Oh, okay, good.
I'm good.
As we just heard in segment one, Mayor Emanuel dumping on Mayor Daley without naming him for he, Rahm, having to raise property taxes so much and taking a pass on my question of would you at least rule out another property tax increase for pensions if you get yourself reelected? Won't go there. And now, Franny, as we tape on Friday afternoon, you've heard from his little brother, Bill. Tell us about that.
Well, little brother is defending big brother. He's had it with this. He read about the attack on your show, and he's absolutely furious. Now, this is not new. The mayor has blamed his predecessor many times before. What is new is that he is putting the blame for the mountain of tax increases that he's put through, and it's like $1.5 billion just in property for police, fire, and teacher pensions, plus the tax on water and sewer bills, plus the two taxes on telephone bills, and the ones that are coming after the election. All of that, he says, that it wasn't his problem. It was deferred. His predecessor kicked the can over to him, and the road had run out, and he had no choice. He would have loved nothing better but then to avoid this, but he could not, and it wasn't his fault. And that's what set Bill Daley off.
Let me understand this. He's blaming Gene Sawyer for kicking the can down the road?
No, Bill is saying very openly, did my brother address the pension crisis? Absolutely not. I'd be an idiot to say that he did. He did not. But he shares that blame with every politician of the last 40 years. And he mentioned specifically all the prior mayors. He said if Rahm Emanuel was unaware of the magnitude of the problem, he should have asked his own floor leader. He should have asked Ed Burke, who was the finance chairman during that time. And so he says it's time to put on the big boy pants and face the fact that you've been mayor for 7 years. It's your problem. Stop blaming the other guy. Richard Jay, 7 years in, didn't blame Martin Kennelly. Rich Daley didn't, 7 years in, blame Gene Sawyer. And Rahm Emanuel to own what he's done.
Greg, does he have a point?
Well, this is one of these cases where they're both right in their own different ways. The mayor is right, Emanuel is right, that he inherited a terrible pension problem from Rich Daley. It got very bad in the last 4 years of Daley's tenure. And the mayor didn't do it about it. The mayor bragged. Mayor Daley always used to brag about how he didn't increase property taxes, which is how this mayor has dealt with the police and fire problems. And he's been attacked. Rahm has been attacked by Paul Vallis, who's thinking of running for mayor, on the basis that he didn't raise the taxes earlier, mm-hmm. that he should have done it right away rather than waiting until his second term. Now, that having been said, Bill Daley is correct that Rahm has been in office for 7 years, and after a while, there's kind of a statute of limitations. I mean, you inherited the problem. You've had 7 years to deal with the problem. Quit blaming somebody else. Just kind of own up to the fact that I inherited this problem, and I've dealt with it, and shut up and don't try to blame somebody else.
Lynn, you covered Bill Daley as one of the Obama chiefs of staff at the White House. What's your take on this?
Well, I think the blame game, will it work politically? You know, I covered Trump in the White House, and he's constantly blaming everything on Obama. It only underscores to me that you elect somebody to find solutions you find solutions, no matter how you got there. So the responsibility of the chief executive, and yeah, Bill knows this from being chief of staff and being a candidate and being around politics, is there's a point where you just have to take responsibility, because that's what the job of governing is, and that's why it's hard. And that's why you have to decide if you're going to do something politically unpopular, because if Ron wanted and Governor Rauner wanted to solve a lot of problems, they could raise taxes. It's not like there's not a solution. They just don't want to take the political responsibility for doing that. You know, there's some, you know, there's solutions, but they comes with a lot of heat. And maybe
and
that's
the other issue with Bill is that Rich Daley has never been credited by Rahm Emanuel for any of the good things he did. So he's saying Rahm Emanuel will stand up and take credit for the schools. A lot of that started under Rich Daley. But when it comes to the blame part, he's willing to freely blame him for everything. And you can't have it both ways.
Now, the other interesting part of this interview to me, after we talked about his vulnerability over taxes, is that he didn't want to talk about the 2019 election, but I tried to get him to at least talk about what we have talked about before. Uh-huh. Who is your base, Rahm Emanuel? And on that, he says, well, that's for other people to discuss. That's for political operatives. I'm not a political operative. So, Greg, what's your take on Rahm Emanuel claiming not to be a political operative?
I will admit it takes a lot of chutzpah to say that yours doesn't stink in this town. Of course he's a political operative and he's a spinner and whatever. But what I think, if I can translate this a little bit, what I think he's saying is that he doesn't, at least as much of his predecessors, rely on good old-fashioned patronage politics, in the sense that, you know, every ward committeeman comes in every year and reports as to how many votes they got and who got what jobs or whatever. But, you know, if you think that every job at City Hall is handed out strict on the basis of merit, I got a bridge to sell you. You know, so he's playing the game. He's more of a his political operation is based more on money than it is on precinct captains, but he still needs people to go out and push buttons, too.
Franny, your take on Rahm Emanuel not a political operative?
Oh, it's hilarious. Laughable. You know, he was the leaker in chief in the White House, and that was what Bill Daley called him, as a matter of fact. And he has been a spinmeister forever. That's what that's where his background comes from. He covets relationships with the national press so that he can spin and use them and ask them to do columns and editorials, and his emails even show it. So for him to say that he's not, yes, he also now has the job of chief executive, but that doesn't mean that you lose the title of spinmeister, because you are one.
And of course,
I want to bring up, though, that the question that Rahm didn't want to answer is a very good one, because the answer is, I don't think, in my analysis, Rahm has a natural political base. He doesn't have a geographical base. He doesn't have I'm not persuaded, though, if you have it, I don't think he has an ethnic or gender or issue base where you could say he starts the race with X percent. So that's another reason where he maybe said he didn't, you know, that there's a reason perhaps why he dodged the question.
Yeah,
so I'm sure
people who don't have a base, they don't need a base because their
votes.
Base is the whole city.
That's right.
Yeah. Well,
go ahead, Lynn.
Or he would say police or fire or something, or educators.
He can't say any of those.
Yeah.
You know, and in the past, it's been the black community, which has carried him in 2011 with Obama's help, and then carried him again and forgave him for the 50 school closings in 2015. But that's not going to happen again because of Laquan McDonald. So now where does he go? What does he say? So he has to say the whole city, anyone who wants the city to be financially stable and moving forward. That's what he says.
Well, doesn't all these opponents, though, really just divide up the opposition?
Yep, and that's what I think has been missed in a lot of the reportage, not by present company, but by other people. You know, it takes somebody to beat somebody, and if there's 48 somebodies all trying to be somebody, guess what? The guy who you're running against kind of skates free. Now, is he going to end up in a runoff? Yeah, but will whoever emerges from the scrum have the time and energy and backing to put something together against him? Really, not necessarily.
Well, Greg, just to cause trouble, you're assuming that Rahm makes the runoff. Should you?
He makes the runoff. I don't see any scenario where he doesn't.
Franny, do you assume it?
I don't assume that. I was surprised once in my coverage life, and that was when Blandick lost. And I promised myself after that that I would anticipate the unexpected and never be surprised again. So I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that he would finish third. I think it would be shocking if he didn't finish in the top two, but I don't think it's like totally out of the question.
Lynn, do you assume Rahm makes a runoff?
I assume nothing.
Okay.
Good idea.
Yeah, I saw a poll this week in the gubernatorials got J.B. Pritzker up on Rahner 18 points. Is that true enough to transmit, Greg?
I think he is well ahead by any definition. Rahner barely won his own primary. Now he's got another Republican running against him as independent candidate, assuming that Sam McCann makes the ballot. It's a blue year. We're maybe headed to another budget crisis in Springfield. It's a blue year nationally as well as statewide. Yeah, I think he's easily ahead 18 points.
So maybe it's not big enough. Fran, do you think that JB's up on Rahner 18 points?
I wouldn't be surprised at that, no. But again, there's so much time. I mean, we said this last week. If ever there were an election that looks like it's over,
yeah,
this is it. But who knows? We've all been around too long to know that things could change in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I think it was last week we concluded it was JB's to lose, and who knows what could happen. Lynn, do you agree that it's JB's to lose?
Oh, yeah. Talk about not having a base. Now, Rahner does have a base, and that is committed Republicans who are not turned off by him. And,
that's not a very large base.
That's a heck of an endorsement there.
But it's a base. People who are not Jeanne Ives Republicans and they're not Sam McCain Republicans, because they're not crazy about Rahner, but they're not driven by some of the hot-button ideological issues that might drive some of these other Republican candidates. So he has at least a base, but what we know from the primary just a few weeks ago is that the structure is that Rahner goes into a state with animated Democratic voters because so many of them poured out into the primary, and we lost in turnout of Republicans. Now, I know in a general election anybody could vote for anybody, but it's a harbinger of how he has extra issues to deal with, which is the energized Democratic turnout. And you have some energized local races. And so he has a structural problem to deal with besides his lack of just having a unified Republican Party. And JB more or less has unified the Republican Party, or at least enough to not have to do the kind of remediation and mitigation that Rahner does.
Yeah, I don't think at core, I don't think Bruce Rahner is a very good politician. He's had a lot of money and that's covered up sins, but if you're going to be a Republican in the state, you kind of need to walk this tightrope where you're going to be just conservative enough that hardcore conservatives, libertarians will turn out for you, but just liberal enough that independents and some Democrats will kind of cross over and back you too. Jim Thompson was real good at that.
Yeah.
Jim Edgar was real good at that. George Ryan, not quite as good, but he won anyhow. But Rahner's just terrible at it. He goes from one side of the fence to the other side of the fence, one side of the wire to the other side of the wire, and he kind of ends up irritating everybody.
Yeah, not good at faking sincerity.
No.
Yeah, and I think his low point was the I'm not in charge thing. I mean, who elected anyone to say that?
Right. That was in the answer to a question by Amanda Vinicky. I think she said to him at the time, but you're in charge. And he came, before he could pull it back into his mouth, he was saying, no, I'm not in charge. Madigan's in charge.
Can you imagine Diana, what she said to him at home that night?
Now, we have to give Rahner one victory this week. The Democrats were unable to muster the votes to override Rahner's veto on the gun shop licensing bill. Do we give him credit for that, Greg?
Not much, Bill. No. I think that's a Pyrrhic victory.
Okay.
To the extent that he can go now back to kind of NRA Republicans and say, see what I did? I stopped this terrible idea. Maybe they'll look at him a little bit, but there's an even more conservative Sam McCann there in between him and them, saying, hey, that guy's just kind of saying this. I'm the true believer, and you know it. But out in the Chicago suburbs where there's tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of voters that he needs seriously to consider voting for him, I think this is a negative because gun politics play different upstate than they do downstate.
Now, Fran, the mayor had crusaded for this gun shop licensing bill. How big a defeat for him is the fact that his fellow Democrats couldn't override Rauner?
Yeah, I mean, he talks a great game. We're going to override him and everything, and that he was going to work on these DuPage Republicans who had women running against them. And that didn't work out. I don't know what happened, but the point is, it is a defeat. They were very strong in that. Now, the onus, as Greg pointed out so wisely, is now up to the governor to come up with his package. If this is no good, if this is just window dressing, then what isn't window dressing? What is going to really make a dent in some of the crime? Now the onus is on him to come up with his plan.
Hey, Lynn, I saw you reporting this week that former U.S. Attorney Pat Fitzgerald is now a lawyer for James Comey. What kind of legal work does Comey need?
Well, I talked to Comey the other day at a book party for him, and there had been the question was put to him, and he had a kind of a funny answer. He said it would be whatever the kind of work you need when you're fired, and that's as far as
indicted. So,
well, he's not indicted, but we know he's he has issues that he may be dealing with in front of Bob Mueller's investigation, and he has not one but three attorneys representing him, and Pat is just one of them. You know, he has negotiations, perhaps, or just he needs these lawyers as liaisons to the Hill committees that were working on Russian collusion probes or Russian probes in general of their impact on the election, which is different than a Russia collusion probe. So he had need of legal representation, and he had Fitzgerald since the day he was fired. So this is almost a year now.
Mm-hmm. And I see there's legislation on the Hill to somehow protect Mueller. Is that going to pass?
Well, yeah.
Is that going to?
No, it passed. It passed through the Senate Judiciary Committee. So that can only have happened with the support of Republicans. But I don't see any way that it will be called for a vote. So far, Senate Leader McConnell has resisted it, but it is a rare bit of bipartisan cooperation here on when it comes to the probe. And I think it's just sending a message to the White House that even though the Senate may not take this measure to the floor today, it's teed up if you need it tomorrow.
Yeah. We should all talk about the political implications of the guilty on all counts against Bill Cosby. Franny, what do you see the implications of this going forward?
That no one is immune, not even America's dad. I mean, can you imagine a fall from grace like this? It's amazing. I mean, that show was such a wholesome, wonderful thing. Everybody loved it. Everybody loved him. He was so wholesome. His act, even his stand-up act, had no profanity. He didn't need it. He was funny. And then to see this happen, and to see it happen this many years later, good for them. Good for them for pursuing it, and good for them for getting finally justice. And it doesn't matter that he's 80 years old. It doesn't matter that he will spend the rest of his life in prison if that's what it turns out to be. Too bad, because there is no tolerance for this anymore. It just isn't. I mean, the whole atmosphere has completely changed.
Suppose it's changing in Springfield, Greg?
Not fast enough. There've been some problems there that have not affected Mike Madigan as much as I thought they might have, given that they come right out of his camp, state representatives close to him, people on his staff and whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think in the broad sense, Fran is right. The revolution has arrived. I mean, you can't pick up the paper or watch the news at night and not find about another famous guy who's under investigation for doing stuff he shouldn't do. I mean, eventually, one would hope that people would figure out that there are rules, and maybe they're different than the rules used to be, but they're there. But, well, who knows?
And, Lynn, your take on the implications of this?
Well, this is in the context I see as the larger Me Too movement that has made it hopefully easier for women to come forward and be believed when they have these allegations come out. And they took two trials for a conviction for Cosby, and I don't know, because I haven't seen if there are jury interviews yet, if this new climate made a difference, but I also know that he had more women testify in this trial, so that might have made a difference. So all of these are sad stories for everyone involved, and hopefully this will just send a warning to people in the future that this behavior's got to stop.
The one danger in this is that with the pendulum has swung so far to one side that an allegation is viewed as guilty until proven innocent. And so there will be men accused who, maybe Tom Brokaw is one of them, we don't know, but there will be men accused who will be who look guilty until it's proven otherwise.
Fran Spielman of the Sun-Times over at the City Hall Press Room, thanks to her, and to Lynn Sweet of the Sun-Times out in Washington, and Greg Hines of Cranes. Up next is Nick Gale.
Connected to Chicago. Podcasts are available online at WLSAM.com.
This is Nick Gale. This week, Mayor Rahm Emanuel and the city clerk officially launched the Chicago City Key program. That's that 3-in-1 city-issued ID, which was to act as ID for the undocumented, as well as a library card, and would help people register to vote. Now included, according to the mayor, discounts at over 30 businesses across the city.
New York has a municipal ID card. San Francisco has it. D.C. has it. And one of the things we wanted to make sure when we talked about this, the city council, Anna, myself, is to make sure that's brought the city together rather than divide it. Made sure the parts of the city that had been walled off for a whole host of reasons were accessed. And I want to thank both the cultural community, the business community, other entities, not just the city agencies, coming together to actually unite and work together to have a municipal ID card that literally as a key unlocks the city that prior to that, the doors had been locked.
The launch taking place at the Field Museum, which is offering a benefit for those with the city key card. Field Museum Chief Marketing Officer Raymond DeThrone.
Here at the Field Museum, it's our mission to fuel journeys of discovery and find solutions for a brighter future, rich in nature and culture. But all of this begins with access, and that's what this ID card provides, and we're honored to take part. We're proud to announce that the City Key cardholders will be granted one free visit per year for them and their families. But equally importantly, we have always given 50 free day admission to people of the state of Illinois. But without an ID card, those people were excluded from participation. Now they can fully embrace and enjoy the benefit that we're offering to all Illinois residents. Dismantling barriers to the city's services and experiences is absolutely crucial work, and we're thankful for the leadership of the city for taking on this immense task. Chicago City Key program unlocks opportunities for all Chicagoans to begin these journeys of discovery that I mentioned earlier. Bit by bit, we're building a brighter future together, rich in nature and culture, for everyone who calls Chicago home.
Critics say City Key invites vote fraud to help re-elect Rahm. Here's what he told our Bill Cameron this week.
That's a red herring, undocumented cannot vote, and it's an attempt to divide people where this is actually trying to bring people together. Now, in the attempt to bring people together, my suggestion to everybody is you all go see the Joffrey Ballet. It's one of the most spectacular dances I've seen in literally a decade.
A complete list of discounts can be found on the city clerk's website. For Connected to Chicago, I'm Nick Gale.
That's our show for this week. Thanks to Matt Mellon for production assistance. I'm Bill Cameron, WLS News.
Connected to Chicago, a look at the top stories of the week with the people making, covering, and talking about the news of the day. Podcasts are available online at WLSAM.com.